Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, it's Monday night, and of course I am stuck in the middle with you. This is the Constitution Hour, brought to you by the wonderful people over at PatriotFamilies.com. That's PatriotFamilies with a YS.com. And I see we have the always lovely and entertaining Miss Linda Sills and our Patriot Families den mother, Miss Yola, in the chat room with us right now. So I want to give you guys a shout out, say hello. Miss Linda, of course, does Wednesday night's show here on Patriot Families right from the left coast. And Miss Yola kind of keeps us coordinated on our website and makes sure that we all behave ourselves properly, or at least as much as humanly possible. You know, we talked yesterday evening a little bit about some numbers, and we had a great caller that called him from time to time, and we had a great conversation. I actually ended up going into the archives, and I did a little bit of math, very basic math, you know, just a few hundred trillion here and there. Nothing too over the top. And depends on whose numbers you really believe, okay? The government accounting office says $60 trillion. I've heard numbers as high as $500 trillion. I tend to believe a series of economists that did a study. They came up with the number of $221 trillion in unfunded liabilities. Now, granted, that's done on an actuarial accounting method over the next 75 years. So, gee, that seems like a long time. The problem is the promises have already been made, just won't be realized yet. And what these economists determined is that there isn't a snowball's chance in Hades that we can meet those obligations. Not in 75 years, not in 175 years. Now, I want you to bear in mind that that number does not reflect our national debt. This number simply reflects the promises that have been made to every working American and maybe quite a few non-Americans. For our government to take care of them in their old age, or should they become disabled and need care. And this really is a one of the 800-pound gorillas in the very crowded cell that is the zoo up in Washington, D.C. So, at our current level of production, just to give you an idea of how impossible it is for this to be sustained for any length of time, under our current production, gross domestic product, last year we were at 14.7, I believe it was, trillion dollars in gross domestic product. That's the total, sum total of all production labor in the United States of America. If we doubled that this year by some miraculous stroke, let's just round it up to 15 trillion. If we doubled that in 2012 to 30 trillion, and then in 2013, if we add growth of another 30 trillion, and we continue to add 30 trillion in growth over the next 10 years, it won't be enough. Now, that's presuming that government is confiscating 100%, ladies and gentlemen, and not spending a penny, just setting it aside to cover the unfunded liabilities. That does not take into account the current growth rate of those liabilities of 10.2%. $1 trillion each and every 12 months, which over 10 years would add another $102 trillion to the $220 that we're trying to pay. And we would find ourselves at the end of 10 years with $300 trillion, which is more than $220. But we would have to add that $102 to the $220, and would find that the sum total would be $323 trillion, and we only have $300 trillion, so it would be $23 trillion short. And by the way, we still haven't funded the government. We haven't done one thing to fund the government over the last 10 years, and we haven't been able to service our debt either, not one penny. It's not possible, guys. It is just not possible. Now imagine for a moment the reality of the situation is that we're trying to fund those liabilities on the backs of 154 working men and women in this country. So we're not talking about confiscating 100% of the wealth, 100% of the production of the country. No, we're going to allow everyone to keep some of their money, and we're going to somehow try to pretend that we can fund this monstrosity on the back of a shrinking workforce. Now, it's interesting to note, when we start talking about money, we'll be inundated with guests and callers, I hope, and that's okay. There's always two sides to every coin, two sides to every story. And for as many stories as you'll find out there about the impending doom and gloom that is right around the corner, you will find just as many out there telling you that they have an inside track on the next latest and greatest innovation that is going to just bust loose our economy. I bring this up because I've received several of those such solicitations in the last few days, just as many as I've received about the impending doom and what I can do to stave off all the impending doom and gloom that's going to occur to me financially if I don't heed their warnings. And of course, the one that I received that actually appears on the surface to be somewhat plausible is talking about all the energy reserves that we have discovered of late. Of course, what they call tight oil and gas, that is oil and gas that until now hasn't been recoverable. That's not really true. The idea that it hasn't been recoverable is misleading in their sales pitch. Because if they were going to tell you the truth, what they would say is that up until now, it hasn't been profitable to recover those reserves of oil and natural gas. But they would have you believe, because of the innovation of horizontal drilling and the modern miracle of fracking, which has been around for many decades, this oil is now recoverable. The reality is that with gasoline at $4 a gallon and no visible end in sight to the ravenous appetite for the industrialized nations of the world for fossil fuels, crude oil, natural gas, energy in any shape or form that they can get their hands on it, it's profitable. But they really overlook huge areas of the economy that I think point to this being a red herring of sorts. What I mean is that I clearly understand there's going to be a lot of people that make a lot of money on energy. The energy sector is profitable. It will remain so, provided that everything continues as it is and things don't get worse. But, of course, we know things look like they have a very, very good potential to get worse, much worse, in fact, than they have been. And even if the United States of America was 100% self-sufficient, it won't matter. And it won't matter because there are several mitigating factors. There are outside forces and inside forces that want us to continue to participate in the idea of globalization and interdependence. And it is that interdependence that will relegate this idea of us drill here, drill now, and, you know, all the, boy, everybody got hyped on that one. But the reality is that as long as we remain interdependent on other nations for all of our goods, and as long as the U.S. dollar remains the reserve currency of the world, then oil is going to be priced in the market. And just because it was drilled and recovered in the Bakken in North Dakota or down in DeWitt, Texas, or down in Louisiana, it's not going to change the price of a gallon of gas or a barrel of oil. Even if the United States were somehow able to flood the market, which I can assure you the energy companies will not do. Why would they? It has only now become profitable to recover and sell this crude oil. Once the price drops below the level of profitability, well, then there's no profit in it. So to think that these big oil companies are going to run out and just flood the market with black gold, it's kind of silly and naive. Now, that's not to say that that production can't ease some of our reliance on others outside of this country that don't really like us, and truth be known, we don't like them. But you got to be careful when you're chasing these golden rainbows that are being sold out there. And that is what they're selling. The inevitability of the end of the feudal reserve system is in view, I think. Now, just because the monetary system itself relies on Federal Reserve notes, and that the system is overwhelmed with debt slash credit and electronic representations of those notes or fiat currency, doesn't mean that the control mechanism will disappear if the monetary system collapses. On the contrary, I think we'll see a large revaluation across global lines and the formation of, or at least the call for a formation of, a United Nations type banking system, meaning a central bank for the entire world that will be run out of the United Nations. Well, Linda, that's a very big, broad question. Why was gasoline cheaper when Bush left office? Why did gasoline rocket to over $4 a gallon during Bush's term in office and then plummet prior to the election all the way down to below $48 a barrel? Now, there's a fundamental rule in economics, and it's pretty universal, I think. The more you make, the more you'll spend. It's pretty simple. You know, when my wife and I were first dating and then had our first child, you know, we were lucky if the two of us together could scrape
up $15,000 in a year's time, and I can assure you we spent $16,000. And as time went on and our abilities increased and our worth, we became more valuable in the workplace. You know, when we hit $30,000, we'd spend $31,000. And so it goes. And the oil-producing nations in OPEC, well, they're no different. Just they have a lot more zeros. And you can well imagine that they sell more or less the same quantity of oil year in and year out. It's always increasing. The amount, the demand, is increasing as more and more third world countries become industrialized. We look at what's happened in India and Pakistan. Their demand for oil has gone up exponentially, as has the demand in China. So even as demand dropped off here in the United States when oil was, or gasoline was $4 a gallon, the demand didn't wane in other countries. They didn't see a steep drop off in demand. Their demand kept going. And they just have to make adjustments. But the OPEC folks, you know, they got really accustomed to that $90+ a barrel oil. And when you take it from $90+ a barrel to $38 a barrel, well, now they're jumping up and down mad as hell because it's difficult to make a profit. They have obligations. And they kind of overextended themselves. And that just depends on who you believe as to how that happened or what the mechanisms were behind it. And I think it's all very complicated, and I don't know that any of us ever get at the truth of what occurred there. But it was a wild ride as it went. And, you know, we watch today... And oil prices are edging ever closer to that $100 a barrel mark. And no one's really talking a lot about it. Instead, they're talking about the presidential campaign. They're talking about Syria. And I do see that since the market closed, we have a pullback of 15 cents, so we're at $95.82 a barrel. And you have to understand that that $95.82 a barrel, that's not for crude oil overseas, that's here in the U.S. If you look at the Brent crude, they're paying $115 a barrel to our $95 a barrel. So Europe is already accustomed to much higher gas prices, which is why they have so many trains and other alternate modes of transportation over there out of necessity. I don't believe that those endeavors would work very well here in the United States, and we've seen how well Amtrak has been managed over the years. So the idea of putting in a high-speed rail, I think, remains a pipe dream. And we have Mr. Michael Magic with us in the room. Michael, welcome aboard. You know, the point I'm trying to make to you all is not one of just knee-jerk doom and gloom and hyperinflation and we're all going to die and the sky is falling. But the storm clouds are gathering and they're looking rather ominous. I think you would have to agree. There are some pretty black clouds on the horizon. And while we have our presidential and vice presidential hopeful out there proselytizing the masses and tickling their ears with what they want to hear, That is to say, of course, Romney and Ryan are out there espousing new jobs and a booming economy and all these wonderful things, and those all sound great, but they're never going to give you a strict proposal on exactly how they will institute all of this wonderfulness that they're going to bring, because they don't have a damn clue how they're going to do it. But they want you to believe that they're going to do it just the same. As does the other side when I hear them talking about what a wonderful job Obama has done in our economy and how many jobs he's saved and how much fraud, waste, and abuse they were able to carve out of Medicare in order to fund Obamacare and so on and so forth. So we have these two opposing ideologies, we're supposed to believe, that each one in its own way is going to lead us to prosperity in the land of milk and honey. And I'm sorry that I'm just not convinced that either one of them has my or your best interests at heart. They have proven on many occasions that your best interest or my best interest is certainly not on their radar screen. But they at least have to pass it off as such. They've got to try and at least make it somewhat plausible so that you'll go out and be a cheerleader and do your civic duty and vote for Mitt Romney or vote for Barack Obama. Save the world. You know, I was cleaning out my closet today, which has been a long overdue task that I still haven't finished, but I might in the next year or two finish my task. And so I had the television on in the bedroom. They were showing a campaign stop in New Hampshire with Romney and Ryan. And Romney was just absolutely laying it on, just as thick and heavy as he possibly could, about what a tremendous opportunity this is for America and how they're going to grow the economy, and they're going to create real jobs, and they're not going to increase taxes. And I understand the principle, and I believe it's accurate that if you lower taxes and the economy begins to thrive, then more revenue is generated and comes into the government. I think that's been proven. However, you have to implement the other half of that strategy, which is, of course, to convince government to rein in its spending, which it's shown it's not capable of doing. And somehow or another, we have this disconnect in our politics. There's an absolute disconnect between Congress and the president. When things work out right, president gets all the glory. And when they go badly, well, he gets all the blame. But of course, he'll always try to shift the blame if he's a Democrat. And if he's a Republican, he'll stand up straight and look you in the eye and say, we'll do better next time. Or at least that's what we're led to believe. But quite honestly, the president doesn't do jack as far as passing laws. And I think we all understand that. So I don't understand the disconnect. And it's cultivated, it's fostered, it's cultivated in our minds day in and day out. you know, we're encouraged to believe in the fallacy. Just like the Electoral College thing. They just don't talk about it. They want your vote. They want you to feel like you're really engaged in a process and that you're going to make a difference in saving the country. And it's very blatant and out in the open now that what they're trying to conserve as conservatives is the status quo. They're trying to conserve the military at its current levels. They're trying to conserve government spending and programs, entitlement programs. But none of them can give you a comprehensive plan on how they intend to do that while at the same time creating all of these mysterious jobs that are hitherto unknown. And then we also are led to believe that it is the purpose of our government to create jobs in the first place. And I'm wondering, where is the little kid to say the emperor has no clothes? And not only is the emperor naked, so is the whole damn Congress. Sooner or later, I would hope that the left-right rhetoric would cool its jets, that people would see through the garbage and recognize it doesn't matter, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a left-wing Marxist and you want to confiscate 100% of every penny of wealth in this country, or whether you're a right-wing extremist nut job and you want to have no taxation whatsoever and no laws, you still can't service what has been created. The debt monster has become so large that they can't get it back into the damned box. And if the truth be known, it's been out of the box and unruly and uncontrollable for quite some time. It's just grown so large and so uncontrollable that the peons, you and I, have begun to take notice. Never good. And it's not going to work out well, and it's going to end badly, and I think it's going to be ugly. And I think we're seeing it not just in this country, but around the world. And as I've said before, I think the reason we're seeing it around the world is because our government, as a way of sweeping the debt balloon under the rug, as it were, through our Federal Reserve banking system, we have managed to export a lot of our debt problems overseas, and we have infected the banking system, monetary policy around the world with a cancer that is growing out of control, and it won't be long until that cancer has consumed the host. Not yours truly, but all of us. It cannot be serviced. It is not manageable. And they know that. And that's why we've been reading stories about George Soros moving gobs of money, but for him, $130, $135 million is small potatoes, but he's hedging his bets. And he's clearly got an inside track on the idea that the financial institutions are going to take it in the keister here pretty quick. That doesn't mean that the financial institutions will end. It just simply means that the solvency problem is becoming apparent to even the average Joe. Now, granted, there's a whole lot of Americans out there who don't have a clue and will be clueless right up until the time that they can't figure out why in the hell they can't buy food at the grocery store. Their dollars just aren't good enough. And, you know, then we can chase down the rabbit hole of eugenics, population control. We can see that for some reason, our federal government has seen fit to purchase enormous quantities of small arms ammunition, hollow points, in fact, that have been outlawed in warfare by the Geneva Conventions. So clearly this must be for civil unrest here at home. But if we look at the quantity, it should scare the hell out of you, quite literally. And I had a great article pulled up earlier about that, written by a military individual. I don't want to give him more rank than he is entitled to. And I am looking for a Major General. So he's a 3-star. For those of you that weren't in the military or don't know, be my little general. So Brigadier Major, I'm sorry, he is a 2-star. See, I knew I would give him more rank than he was due. But retired Major General Jerry Curry wrote Friday in an article, "Why are domestic government agencies purchasing enough lethal ammunition to put 5 rounds in every American?" And I posted a link to the article in the chat room. And I think it bears asking. I think the general has asked a perfectly plausible question that we're seeing an order of 750 million rounds and then an additional 750 million rounds of miscellaneous bullets. So I'm not really sure, but I think that's like 1,500,000,000 rounds of ammunition. What in the hell do they need this much ammo for here in the United States? Now, either they're planning on something really, really bad going down in the U.S., and they want these people at Homeland Security and Social Security admin and wherever else to be able to defend themselves against all us terrorist patriots out here. And, you know, maybe there is the idea that they're trying to corner the market on ammunition, make it more difficult to acquire. It sure as hell can't be for training purposes. I mean, let's face it. you don't use hollow points for target practice. If you do, then you've got a lot of money and not much sense. But of course, I guess that would describe government, wouldn't it? And again, I'm not trying to fearmonger, and I'm not trying to stir up dissension in the ranks, but I think this is a legitimate question. And, you know, the article has a lot of good information in it. It also talks about a secret force within the U.S. military is undertaking operations in a majority of the world's countries. The new Pentagon power elite is waging a global war whose size and scope has never been revealed, according to a recent congressional research report. Joint Special Forces Operations Command forces reportedly conduct highly sensitive combat and supporting operations against terrorists on a worldwide basis. And it says Special Ops Command now numbers just under 66,000. That's a lot of people. So you gotta start, you know, saying, gee, I've got all these dots on the board up here. What's the connection? And I think the connection is pretty obvious, that if we look at all the what appears to be preparations for some kind of domestic uprising of some sort, and we see the financial writing on the wall, well, I don't think it's a giant leap, ladies and gentlemen, to say that the powers that be are worried, at the very least, concerned. That a large number of the American people are not going to take too kindly to having their gravy train snatched out from under them, by God. I think that's exactly what's going on. And I still don't know exactly how it will all come down and what it will all look like. Today was the first day that I've gotten a hard and fast date that by December of 2013, it will be in full bloom. Now, I don't know if it's going to take that long or not. And I don't know if they know. I think they know that they can't see a way for it to last beyond that date. And we have Miss Linda on the line. Miss Linda, how are you?
Good evening, sir. How's everybody in the chat room? How are you doing?
We're doing good, and I see we've got Mr. Michael Magic in the room now, and Mr. Bill Strongs, and we lost Doc, so I don't know. He must have
got
with my commentary.
Well, you know, I mean, we've seen the stories of the purchases, the riot gear, all this craziness, the tanks in the streets, and, you know, with their, what do they call it, training programs and all this, yeah, like
the
training in quotes.
Our local police.
Yeah. You still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. It almost sounded like I lost you for a second. Yeah, the financial situation, I'm pretty sure that's what it's tied to, that they know that if they do a bank holiday, there's going to be, you know, a mess. People, the ones who haven't gotten their heads out of the sand yet and probably won't until it's way too late. So that's what they're expecting. I really think that's part of it. Although there was that, I think he was a Marine or something, and I don't know where it was, but it was all over the talk shows, like internet talk shows, and on the Facebook about the guy that got arrested for posting something derogatory about the government on Facebook.
Well,
so he's arrested.
Right,
yeah,
he's terrorist. Like patriots, you know, all the patriots are terrorists, just like the founding fathers. I mean, gosh,
well,
why people can't figure this out.
Well, then you know, we're talking about. Later tonight, I'll be looking at that video that you sent, or the audio that's apparently lengthy, about the financial situation. What do you call it? The feudal reserve? They call it the feudal. That's funny.
The feudal reserve. Why I hadn't thought of that, I don't know, and I'm kicking myself for it. But,
So, that's going to help me understand what's coming and possibly when. Why? How did they pick that date? Or is that ever-changing?
Right. And, going back and what Linda's talking about, I sent out a video alert that I got from a group called the Sovereign Society. Not to be confused with, ladies and gentlemen, the Sovereign Movement and that the Southern Poverty Law Center has labeled as a terroristic hate group simply because they see themselves as sovereigns and not government. But nonetheless, I digress. Some time ago, I had talked about a book that I received from a friend of mine, and the title of the book is The Sovereign Individual, and it was written by two gentlemen, Lord Rees Moog, M-O-O-G, and another guy whose name escapes me at the moment. But nonetheless, the book was written in 1996, and it foretold pretty much exactly what is happening right now.
Wow. Well, when you in the beginning of the show, you were throwing those figures around. I mean, you're right. They themselves know that this is not. There's no way to pay this back. So all the money in the planet's not going to pay. I mean, it's stupid. And they know that they can't get it, back into the box because it's so out of control. And it is a huge cancer, and we're feeling the effects of it daily, and it's going to get, ugly, and nobody knows, how it's going to play out. I do think that people people who are aware, who may be prepared, and we know what's coming, hopefully we'll get through it, provided they don't try to come throw us into, rail cars and take us to camp, because then it will really get ugly, because I'm not going to a camp. Not going. But,
the other guy's name is James Dale Davidson. Now,
okay.
I did some research on these guys back when I got the book. And it turns out that these two gentlemen were in a, investment opportunity strategy. And they got in a little bit of trouble with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And who knows, but they walked away unscathed from what I can tell. So it looks like maybe somebody has, kind of stepped in on their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
But with that being said, I think that, this kind of is in keeping with the idea that Alex Jones has talked about and several others, that they feel the need to inform us of what they're going to do and what's going to be doing.
Wow.
So, on Amazon it says, keep in mind the book was written in 1997, long before September 11th, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Here are a few quotes from the book. All nation states face bankruptcy and the rapid erosion of their authority. Page 23. Page 29, we forecast and explain why militant Islam will displace Marxism as the principal ideology of confrontation with the West. Page 29.
Wow.
Page 137, you can expect to see crises of misgovernment in many countries as political promises are deflated and governments run out of credit. it's just dang. They hit the nail on the head time and time again. So I think when they're putting out a letter to their investor group,
mm-hmm.
You know, called the Sovereign Society, then I think we should pay attention to it. Now, I don't jump in and invest in everything they tell me
right.
about. I use their newsletter more as information and kind of follow
sure.
some of their recommendations, what they're talking about, and see if it comes to pass or not.
Right.
They've been pretty daggum accurate.
Wow.
So I think when, you know, that's a pretty bold statement they're making in the video, that, and they give the specific day, not just December
23rd. Oh, wow.
They said by December, I think it was 21st of 2013, it's going to be all hell has broken loose. So, you know, take that for what it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they've got somewhat of an inside track, if you will, on what's going on.
Right, and how long this bubble before it goes completely upside down? Yeah, wow. I'm surprised we haven't collapsed already. I'm really, really shocked.
I used to be, but I think in light of everything going on, I think there's some things that were not perhaps planned for. Maybe they were. I don't know. But
mm-hmm.
certainly some of the key players are not acting like they were planned for. You know, when we see reports coming out that Bernanke and Geithner are running around behind the scenes trying to get support for a bailout of the transatlantic banking system, you know, that calls into question, did you not believe that the BRICS and the other countries around the world were going to stop trading in the dollar? I mean, you know, the dollar as a currency against other currencies, it can only depreciate to a certain point before other countries stop trading in it.
Sure. And they've been doing that for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the average Joe American here in the United States, we don't have much of a choice in what currency we deal in.
But they're trading, some of them are trading gold for oil.
Oh, I know. I know. I'm fully aware of that. And that's something that they talk about in the presentation.
Uh-huh.
You know, everybody's favorite demon, Hugo Chavez, as I reported some time ago on the show, he dumped $22.5 billion in U.S. dollars and converted them to euros. Now, I don't know that was a real bright move, but, you know, the euro is still outpacing the dollar right now. A dollar in the euro is still worth 80 cents.
Wow.
So, you know, where it was 2-3 years ago was almost at par, but never at par with the British pound. You know, a U.S. dollar in
mm-hmm.
merry old, jolly old England is worth 63 cents.
Wow. Oh, my God.
And I think the currency market is one place where folks ought to be paying attention. It's something
sure.
that I've been watching since I started, since I got
mm-hmm.
involved, because, you know, something told me, you know, follow the money. Okay, well, where do you follow the money? The exchange rate on currencies is where you follow the money, and you see the impact of it. And I've watched the markets, and I've seen the traditional rise and fall of currencies and crude oil based on U.S. dollar or vice versa, crude oil and the U.S. dollar, that relationship. And it seemed for a while there that there was a decoupling, a disconnect
mm-hmm.
in that traditional movement. You know, you could
right.
see you would see the dollar decline and oil prices would go up. You would see the dollar go up and oil prices would decline.
Okay.
And there was a virtual decoupling of that. And, you know, a somewhat example of it is right now today, the U.S. dollar index is down 0.04, which previously would have equated to an increase in oil prices, and yet we see a 15-cent drop in the price of a barrel of crude oil. So it seems to be that the old connection or link between the dollar and crude oil has done kind of a flip-flop.
Mm-hmm.
So as the dollar gets stronger, oil prices go up. And as the dollar gets weaker, oil prices go down. That's a disconnect that was never there previously. But another thing that I've seen since 2005 or so is a move that appears to me that we're getting an alignment where all the other currencies are coming into par with the U.S. dollar, equivalent
mm-hmm.
to the U.S. dollar, equal to. 2007 saw the Canadian loonie reach parity with the dollar, meaning a dollar in Canada is worth a dollar in Canada. You know, right now it's 99 cents. In Australia, our dollar is worth 96 cents. In the euro, it's worth 81 cents. In Switzerland, it's worth 97 cents. You see what I'm getting at? It's all almost right at parity with the dollar. Now, there's some other countries where that's not really applicable. One is going to be the Japanese yen, where a dollar in Japan is worth 79 yen. But back in 2005, that dollar was worth 130 Japanese yen.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're moving towards a virtual parity
right.
in the currency market, which means that even though we see the dollar as a whole is gaining some ground, you know, overall when compared to a basket of eight currencies,
mm-hmm.
okay, in the long run, the dollar is being diminished. And what you're seeing is the other currencies in the world being diminished or being bolstered
right.
to bring them at parity with the
right.
U.S. dollar.
So if the whole thing melts down and they close the banks, how long would they close them for? What do you think?
You know, I don't know. They're, you know, of course, you never let a good crisis go to waste. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's, truer words were never spoken.
Damn Rambo dead fish.
How long does it take? You know, if past performance is any indicator of future
right.
undertakings, it would probably be 2 or 3 days, you know, a week maybe at the most.
Oh, okay.
I think we've got some wild cards in the mix that, you know, we just don't know. And
okay.
those wild cards at this point, you know, Syria is still a wild card. But I think Iran is truly, honestly, the single biggest stumbling block to the whole damn thing. They're the only ones left. They're the last holdout. They're the
mm-hmm.
last bastion in the Middle East, and that'll scare the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
You know? But I think they're feeling the pressure. And, you know, we can talk about the Soviet Union and China as being enemies to America and democracy and our promotion of democracy around the world, and we're going to save everybody from themselves. But then we see, you know, today I read that Putin and Russia has said that, you know, the only authority that they will recognize that can call for military intervention in Syria is the United Nations.
Oh, God.
So, golly gee, is Russia really an enemy? Doesn't sound like it to me. They're saying, hey, you know, we need the United Nations to vote for this, and then we'll be okay with it.
It's pretty crazy. I don't know what. I mean, there's all this rumblings and saber rattling of Israel and Iran going at each other's throats, and then apparently with. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, well, I think you're right, and of course. The saber rattling has been going on for a long time.
True.
But I think the rhetoric is getting stepped up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And I honestly think that what we might see happen in the next 12 months is some kind of UN resolution to the quote-unquote genocide going on in Syria. I see Fox News is playing interviews with local Syrians whose family members have all been killed by the government, evidently. You know, I don't know if that's true or not. How in the hell do you validate that? I mean, honestly.
Piece, I guess the Chinese were pissed off at the Japanese over some island, and they're fighting over that, and there was all kinds of dissidents going on inside of China, and they were trashing existing inside that country's Japanese businesses and all kinds of mayhem going on. Yeah, lovely. There's just so much hate in the world. Like we've talked about before, why do we have to be involved with all of these people? Look, we've got enough problems here, and nobody's addressing any of it. And then we've got the evil ones with the Federal Reserve, and there's no oversight on that at all, and they're all in bed with each other. It's sickening. I want my country back, and I don't know how to get it.
Well, you know, and I think, quite honestly, I mean, you know, there's part of me every day that looks at this stuff and says, you know, perhaps it's not what it seems, but damn it, the evidence is so overwhelming that I just slap myself in the mirror and say, okay, dummy, wake up, you know, get out, snap out of it, and pay attention. I mean, it's absolutely insane. And evidently, we've found the way to stir up the dissidents in China. You know, we can just put an embargo on soybean oil, and they're in deep shit. The people are going to riot.
Yep.
Evidently, that's their favorite modality of cooking. But
well,
I think we're going to see... I think we're going to see a toppling of the Assad regime. Whether or not that comes about by some meeting of the minds in the UN Council and a joint effort that might involve, you know, Russian, U.S., and all of the various troops. But nonetheless, I think the Assad regime is D-O-N-E done, just as Gaddafi was. And I believe that once that is well in hand, that it's going to be Katie bar the doors. Iran, you're it.
Yep. Now, how does the Muslim Brotherhood and these crazies in Egypt fit into all of this?
Have the foggiest damned idea, quite honestly. Although, I do know that they've been, you know, working with and for our Central Intelligence Agency since their inception. And I know that there are some that are within our own government and that influence is very strong. But I've always taken the idea that Islam, the Muslims in general,
mm-hmm.
Are easily manipulated. And that's why they feature so prominently. And of course, the area that you're trying to subdue at this point in time is the Middle East.
Right.
And so the best modality, the best means of accomplishing your ends is to include the Muslims. And again, it's real easy to incite them into violence. I forget who it was that sent me the email today about the depression, and the guy in the email was very depressed, and so he called a suicide hotline and was redirected to Pakistan. And when he told them he was suicidal, they got very excited and asked if he knew how to drive a truck. I just think that this is the end game wrapping up over in the Middle East, and I think it's so obvious and transparent that, it really doesn't warrant a whole lot more discussion. We can talk about what's mm-hmm. going to happen and what role is Israel going to play in the grand scheme of things. I have no earthly idea. It wouldn't surprise me to see some mishap that accidentally blows up the dome of the rock, the mosque over there, and the rebuilding of a temple start immediately. What's that?
Oh, I was trying to turn down my sound. I'm almost getting ready to go to a meeting, and I'm hoping I don't lose signal because I'm in the wrong room. It's a big Tea Party thing. They're dealing with a lot of Agenda 21 stuff. They're dealing with candidates. Oh, God, just a ton of, city council stuff. And so I got to go check those guys out and hang out with some people who are conservatives, because the other group, the other faction will make me crazy. But as I was saying in the chat room earlier, the method to my madness is whoever I phone bank for owes me. And I'll remind them of it.
How about we start using the term patriots instead of conservatives? I'm going to try and push myself to do that.
How about freedom lovers? How about freedom fighters?
That's a friend of mine sent me an email, and he was talking about the terminology and how we allow the opposition to control the terms of the conversation. And I agree with him. He said, and he's not even comfortable with using the term homosexual anymore. He said, let's just call them what they are, sexual deviants.
Yep.
I told him I think that may be a little harsh. We're supposed to love, and we're not supposed to repay evil with evil, but repay it with love, and it will heap burning coals on their head.
Well, they can call themselves, I don't care if they call themselves gay or what, it's just silly. They are what they've choose to be. Whether they're born that way or not, I'm not God, I can't figure it out. I think if that's the case, it's a birth defect. No big deal.
And this is something that I'm struggling with, and I had a conversation on my preterist, the RP list, I was telling you guys about, and this idea of predestination. Mm-hmm. The Calvinists believe that, we're all predestined and we just don't have a say in the matter. So, my next inquisition is going to be, so where does that leave the sexual deviant homosexuals?
Wow.
You telling me that they're right, that God made them that way? I have a hard time with that.
I don't know. I don't know if he purposely made them that way. I don't know if he purposely makes people with club feet either. I don't know. But I just think the ones that drive me bonkers is not the ones who are in or out of the closet. It's the ones who have to march around and, try to force their views on everybody else and make sure that every kid in the classroom learns about it. That's what makes
the flamboyant ones.
You mean like the banking queen, Barney Frank?
Barney's not terribly flamboyant about it, which
he's not as bad as Carson Kressley and a few others.
Having a public wedding to me was pretty repulsive, but whatever. You know, that's a good friend of mine. Him and his wife had to go. They live on a houseboat, and their neighbors are lesbian, and they invited them over for ceviche. And I will leave out the jokes that I insinuated to his wife. I said, well, you know, if they come out with a couple of raw lemons and a salad shooter, be careful. But they're not, you know, they're not blatantly homosexually, sexually deviant. They don't run around the boat dock, you know, slobbering on each other at every opportunity and that kind of thing. So, you know, each to their own. Jefferson, you know, but I do find it a tad over the top when they.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Hold on,
you
one
know,
second.
Like,
talking because I got to tell my mom something. Okay.
Like the guy I saw in the picture that was boarding the flight in San Francisco dressed in knee-high black nylons and a blue thong panties and a brassiere and a shawl, and it's like, really?
God.
I mean, are you that proud of your deviance that you just want to announce it to everybody? I don't know what the answer is.
Well, like I said, we just have to pray and know where we stand, you know, and prepare for these impending lovely doom things that are happening or going to happen. What else can we do?
I just hope I don't have to shoot anybody, you know?
I know. I pray for that all the time. You would have to, but...
Yeah, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, I don't like the idea that American citizens might be the target from these bombs. It just aggravates me. But,
and
you know,
I suppose if I fully embrace the idea of Calvinism, then you know I'll gleefully shoot them because that's what God intended me to do.
Wow. But,
I can only hope that the first one's carrying a machine gun.
Oh, God, I know. I don't want to think about it. Yeah, it's pretty scary. Like I say, I don't want to. I will defend my mom and myself, so, and whatever neighbors that are close at hand. You know, and just, like you said, we're hoping that it doesn't come to that and they'll leave people alone as long as we're not out rioting. I don't plan on rioting, that's for sure. But, you know, the founders, they had to shoot too, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But. And, you know, I took the opportunity last night to kind of invade another radio program that was on Blog Talk and really caused a lot of controversy.
What did you do?
It was another show on the end times that we're in, that
right.
they're preaching the end times. And as long as I have the ability to read and discern a little bit, until I find something in my scripture that pushes me off of this,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to continue in my quest for the past fulfillment, and I know that gets some people angry, and I'm really just trying to get people to open their minds and think for
right.
a moment, you know, about what they think they know versus what is actually printed in the Bible itself. And the young man, very pleasant, it was a good conversation. There were a couple of people in the chat room calling me some unsavory things, but that's okay. It doesn't bother me. But one of the things that the young man that was hosting the show brought up was the prophecy in Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
And where I have a problem, you know, there's 70 weeks are determined in Daniel. Now, the futurist will have us believe that the 70 weeks, each of the weeks represents a certain year, okay? And so it adds up to 490 years, but after Christ comes, then the last week is somehow transformed into 2,000 plus years.
Wow.
And I really have a hard time making that leap. And what I pointed out to him is what the angel Gabriel specifically told to Daniel, and that is the context. 70 weeks are determined for your people. Daniel was Jewish.
Ah.
And for your holy city, Jerusalem. And then he goes on to tell him why, the purpose for the 70 weeks that have been determined against the Jewish people or Israel and for your holy city, Jerusalem, to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness. And this last one I think is infinitely important, to seal up vision and prophecy and to anoint the most holy. Well, we know who did those things. We know who the most holy is. That was Christ Jesus.
Right.
We know that through his sacrifice he brought in everlasting righteousness. We know that he made an end of sin. Now, that doesn't mean literally on the earth that sin has ended. It simply means that our sins are not seen by God. When he looks on us, he sees his Son.
Right.
So, it just, we have to, I think, keep these things in context. God's final judgment was not on the entire world, the whole of the world. It wasn't on the Chinese. It wasn't on the Kenyans. It wasn't on the South Americans. The covenant that was made was with Israel. And Israel is always represented in the Bible with the number 12. There were 12 tribes. There were 12 apostles. You know, there were 12 loaves left over after the loaves and the fishes, or 12 baskets, I'm sorry. Those represent the tribes of Israel. That represents Israel. And, you know, in Revelation, when John, after, and I think it's important to note that when John sees the new Jerusalem coming down out of heaven, in Revelation 21, this is after the final judgment, after the final battle, that John is seeing the rebirth. And he says, "Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. Then I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride." And look, it's a cube, right? And it's 12 by 12 by 12 by 12.
Right.
It's Israel. It's the new Israel. And there is a new covenant. And where do we find that new covenant? And where do we find new Israel? The new covenant is in Christ. And the new Israel is the church that Christ said would be built on the foundation of whom? The 12 apostles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is an interesting sidebar to that. There's 12 foundation stones in the new city, which are the 12 apostles. But didn't one of the apostles betray Christ?
Right.
So there's still 12.
Wow.
Something to think
stuff.
About. Yeah, something to think about. That was a conversation that a friend of mine and I have had. You know, did Judas Iscariot go to hell? Or was he destroyed after he died a horrible death in the physical realm because of his betrayal of Christ? Or was he rewarded because he did what he was supposed to do?
Wow. Yeah. It is food for thought.
That's a tough one. That's another one I'm going to pose to my group. And I suppose the argument could be made that the fact that Judas did betray Christ brought about the crucifixion, which had to happen, and therefore he was a necessary component in the building of the new church. But that doesn't mean that he himself has gone on to be with the Lord.
Right.
I don't know.
We won't know until we get there.
Nope, we won't. You're right.
And I think that's part of the plan. He keeps us guessing for a while. He wants us to have faith.
Well, you know what? I think you're right. And I think the reason for that is because if we really did know, we probably would just be lazy, no good SOBs and not
right.
do a doggone thing and not lift a finger and descend into Babylon.
Exactly. And if he didn't, you know, if he gave everybody the answers, then the guys never would have gotten up to fight the Revolutionary War.
That could be. We just,
yep.
like I said, we just don't know.
But I'm going to do what I think is correct, stand where he wants me to stand, and keep trying to spread the truth.
I think that's all any of us can do is, you know, move forward and try to do the right thing based on our understanding and pray.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If we seek him, I think the armor will be with us. You know, I believe that. I have to believe that. So I do believe he is a protectorate in all senses of us. You know what I mean? Physical, spiritual, mental, all of it. And so that's what I'm trying to do. But I, my ideology has to stay steadfast. I do believe in capitalism, free markets, and individual responsibility, and no government if possible, or very little.
Right.
So,
well, yeah,
possible. Yeah, I'm not going off that message either.
I think it is a necessary evil, but you know, a little leaveneth the whole loaf, as Christ said.
Yeah.
Huh. So a little evil goes all out, baby. I think that's the point.
So I'm just drawing my line in the sand and trying to explain that, you know, whether you're dealing with socialism, fascism, as opposed to what the founders wanted in the original sense, and if you're dealing with things like Agenda 21. These are not bipartisan faction issues. This is an issue of pure liberty or not. You know what I mean? You've got a way to choose. That's it.
You know, I look at the founders and I don't know whether they realized it or not,
mm-hmm.
whether or not that was their motivation. Okay. I think that what they espoused, what they aspired for or to as a government was basically walking away from the world system and not being an island unto themselves, but also not succumbing to the temptations of,
right, of what
power
we're at today.
And empire. Right.
Yeah. which is complete, you know, unholy alliances. And I know, I'm pretty sure Jefferson hated it. He was all for trading, you know, commerce, but very much a Ron Paul thinker as well. You know, I mean, if they, you know, those two I put together in the same kind of the same category of how they thought foreign policy. Of course, now we talked about Hamilton. He was, you know, the banking queen of his day. So, because he definitely probably wanted more control and you know, Federal Reserve type currency. So that wasn't a good thing.
Well, and that's, you know, I think, I guess if you were going to divide it up, if we have to, between the Obama camp and the Romney camp at this point, I think the Obama camp and a good number of their ardent followers fully and wholly embrace the idea of singular government, a one world government.
Oh, sure.
And I think Romney and his boys and a lot of them that are going to follow him, they're under the idea of, nah, we want American hegemony to continue, and it can continue if we just do it the right way.
Yeah.
And
oh,
I think
Lord.
They're both nuts.
Well, yeah, exactly, because like I talked about Jerry Brown, you know, having his hand on the handle of the toilet, they're going to flush it. Both sides are. I mean, they're stupid. You can't, you know, they're under that same false impression that if just the right people are doing something, that it's going to make all the difference in the world. And that's not true.
Right. If
you know,
we just say the secret magic word that no one's figured out yet, you know, that
or,
Hiram,
you know,
Abiff
if
wouldn't
somebody,
give up.
You got somebody with wings and a halo that's going to, you know, be the dictator. I mean, it's just asinine. Sorry. Thanks.
Well, you know, I agree. And on that note, I think I'm going to
finish
play
it up.
Our,
thank you so much.
Yep, I'm going to play our intro song as our exit song. And
awesome.
Guys, you know, God bless, and we'll see you tomorrow night right here at 7 o'clock for Patriot Families Chat, and then Wednesday night for Miss Linda with Right from the Left Coast, and then on Thursday night, Miss Terry Rowland with Patriot Education. Linda, thank you for calling in.
Thanks
Go
so much.
Get them and have a good
God
time.
God bless. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I think this song sums up our predicament completely.
Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in.